This week, was Thomas Paine a Freemason? How much of the success of the American Revolution can we attribute to the writings of Thomas Paine? Then, we'll look at the history of religion, specifically their shamanic beginnings, and how that ties back to Freemasonry. In a great article by Brother Jonathan Dinsmore, he explores the question, does a shamanic thread weave through all religions? All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 578. Thank you to all of those who are out there supporting the show, whether contributor, fellow, producer, or legacy partner. You make the WCY podcast happen. We're spreading Masonic education to all those interested all over the world, and it's all thanks to you. If you'd like to learn more about how you can help the WCY podcast and its mission to spread Masonic light to all those interested, head on over to WCYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show. In the news, well, it's a new year, 2023 AL 6023, if you're keeping track of that sort of thing. And here we are, a new year, maybe a new us. And I hope you had a safe, wonderful, and joyous New Year, Christmas, or whatever you were celebrating. First up, I do want to let everybody know we relaunched the Skull and Crown website, and it is up to date. So there is nothing really there to purchase, but there are ideas of what you can ask for. Pretty much everything I do is custom, so it's not super crazy expensive or anything like that, so don't let that fool you. But if you are interested in checking out some of the things I've got posted there, please do head on over and you can just send me a message about what you're looking for. As far as presentations go, I think our website might be a little out of date. I've got a couple things on there from last year still. I got to clean those up, but as of right now, we've got something at the end of January looking at going to Recovery Lodge in South Carolina. And then in February, we've got a little something special happening, a brand new presentation that I don't think I'm allowed to talk about yet. We've got a couple things happening throughout the year. So if you are interested in having me come out to do any one of the presentations that I give, which are all on the website under presentation schedule, head on over there, check out some of the blurbs on the different presentations, and we can make something happen, whether that's virtual, through Zoom, or Teams, or in person. I'll be also at the Scottish Rite Valley up in Michigan in the coming months as well to do something on colonial America and Freemasonry. And for those with an esoteric bent, I'll be hanging around to talk all things interesting in that realm of Masonry as well. This week, I wanted to do a little something, well, we always kind of do something a little different, I guess. Those of you who have listened to the show for a long time know that I am a huge fan of Thomas Paine. And although, you know, a lot of people debate whether Paine was a Mason or not, I think it's pretty definitive that he was not a Mason, but held Masons in close contact to himself. And in fact, many Mason were benefactors to Thomas Paine, Benjamin Franklin, one of them. Recently, one of the news emails I get comes from the World Union of Deists, and it was their January 2023 issue. And it really struck a chord, not only because of my deist leaning, but because of my appreciation of Thomas Paine. Thomas Paine was all about progress of humanity, recognizing that we are not yet what we should be in the realm of evolutionary consciousness. He dreamt of a future where man was truly equitable, and to do so, to get to that point, it became necessary for him to be combative toward things like organized religion, organized monarchy, and things of this nature. But truly, his ideas were all about progress. He was not a rich man. He was against the monarchy. He was against slavery. He was for America's independence. But anyway, I'd like to just read this great newsletter, which has an article in it called Thomas Paine Was and Is Indispensable for True Progress. January 29th, 2023 is 286 years since the birth of Thomas Paine. Thomas Paine was born on January 29, 1737, to a lower-income, working-class family. In spite of the fact that he was not a trust fund baby, Thomas Paine changed the world for the better. Struggling to make ends meet in London, England in 1774 after suffering through the death of his first wife and child, a divorce from his second wife, and a business failure and bankruptcy, Thomas Paine had the wonderful opportunity and great fortune to meet the deist, Benjamin Franklin. Ben Franklin recognized the profound character and genius of Paine. He suggested that Tom Paine should go to America and make his home there. Franklin wrote a letter of recommendation for Paine to help him secure employment in America. In all probability, Ben Franklin more than likely gave Paine the money he needed for his journey to America, since Paine was then living hand-to-mouth. On November 30, 1774, Thomas Paine arrived in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Unfortunately, he was ill with typhoid fever and was so weak he had to be carried off the ship. It took 6 weeks for Paine to recover from his illness. He was cared for by Ben Franklin's physician, Benjamin Rush. In March of 1775, Paine secured a position as editor of the Pennsylvania Magazine. He wrote many important articles using a pen name for the magazine. Some of his articles were in opposition to slavery, and others giving reasons why the people in the 13 English colonies should break free from England and the British monarchy. Paine's writings on the topic of the people in the colonies breaking with their mother country culminated with his powerful pamphlet Common Sense, which he wrote in the last part of 1775 and published on January 10, 1776. The rationale and moving arguments in Common Sense won enough popular support for the breaking away from England by the American colonists to actually make the American Revolution a reality. The financial windfall from the sale of Common Sense was altruistically donated by Tom Paine to the American Revolutionary cause, despite his own unstable financial situation. Starting something is a lot easier than seeing it through to its completion. After the American Revolution was started, the American rebels suffered one devastating loss after another. The Continental Army was pushed out of Long Island, New York, which was followed quickly by another crushing defeat at Fort Lee in New Jersey. The rebel army was chased completely out of New York and New Jersey and was licking its wounds across the Delaware River in Pennsylvania just 5 months after the signing of the deistic document, the Declaration of Independence. The deist George Washington knew the power of Paine's pen. He asked his fellow deist, Thomas Paine, to write an inspiring pamphlet to encourage the people to continue their work to sustain the American Revolution. Thomas Paine wrote not just one pamphlet to accomplish this, but a series of 13 pamphlets called The American Crisis. The first in the series of The American Crisis, Washington had his officers read to the remaining soldiers on December 23, 1776, just 2 days prior to the crossing of the Delaware River and the Battle of Trenton, the day after the crossing. This victory literally saved the American Revolution from failure. By holding on against the odds and never quitting, the American revolutionaries were able to win enough battles for the deist Ben Franklin to secure the financing of the French government. This financial and material backing by France ensured the victory of the American Revolution and its life-improving ideals. However, without the inspiring and challenging writings of Paine, the battles would not have been won, and the French would never have backed the American Revolution. This, in all probability, would have caused the American Revolution to fail. After the success of the American Revolution, Thomas Paine was not at all finished with working to make the world a better place. He wrote The Rights of Man, which was to counter the arguments of British conservative Edmund Burke's anti-revolutionary reflections on the revolution in France. Paine was attacked by the British government for The Rights of Man, and the book was banned. In 1792, in answer to sedition and libel charges, Paine wrote, quote, Paine wrote, quote, if to expose the fraud and imposition of monarchy, to promote universal peace, civilization, and commerce, and to break the chains of political superstition, and raise degraded man to his proper rank, if these things be libelous, let the name of the libeler be engraved on my tomb. End quote. Next, Thomas Paine wrote The Age of Reason. This deistic book is, in my opinion, the very best and most important book ever written about God, deism, and religion. It may be surprising to many people, but Paine's primary reason for writing The Age of Reason was to persuade people in France who were rushing towards atheism to stop and think, and to realize that religion is not from God, but is the product of greedy men who depicted God as a jealous, genocidal, and threatening entity for their own selfish reasons. In a letter to the American revolutionary Samuel Adams, who was a Christian and who took issue with Paine's The Age of Reason, Paine wrote, quote, "With respect to the Age of Reason, which you so much condemn, and that I believe without having read it, for you say only that you have heard of it, I will inform you of a circumstance, because you cannot know it by other means. I have said in the first page of the first part of the work that it had long been my intention to publish my thoughts upon religion, but that I had reserved it to a later time of life. I have now to inform you why I wrote it and published it at the time I did. In the first place, I saw my life in continual danger. My friends were falling as fast as the guillotine could cut their heads off, and, as I every day expected the same fate, resolved to begin my work, I appeared to myself to be on my deathbed, for death was on every side of me, and I had no time to lose. This accounts for my writing it at the time I did, and so nicely did the time and the intention meet, that I had not finished the first part of the work more than 6 hours before I was arrested and taken to prison. Joel Barlow was with me, and he knows the fact. In the second place, the people of France were running headlong into atheism, and I had the work translated and published in their own language to stop them in that career and fix them to the first article, as I have before said, of every man's creed who has any creed at all, I believe in God." End quote. The success of the American Revolution in the political realm made a deistic revolution in religion possible. Prior to the completion of the American Revolution, there was not a nation in which people could openly and freely discuss and debate religious issues. Blasphemy laws made this impossible. The American Republic's Jeffersonian and constitutional principle of separation of religion from government made this long overdue debate possible. In The Age of Reason, Paine wrote, quote, "Soon after I had published the pamphlet Common Sense in America, I saw the exceeding probability that a revolution in the system of government would be followed by a revolution in the system of religion. The adulterous connection of church and state, wherever it had taken place, whether Jewish, Christian, or Turkish, had so effectually prohibited by pains and penalties every discussion upon established creeds and upon first principles of religion, that until the system of government should be changed, those subjects could not be brought fairly and openly before the world, but that whenever this should be done, a revolution in the system of religion would follow. Human inventions and the priestcraft would be detected, and man would return to the pure, unmixed, and unadulterated belief of one God and no more." The World Union of Deists has been working diligently for 30 years to bring Thomas Paine's deistic revolution in religion forward. The first step in this Herculean task is to educate enough people about deism to make a profound difference. Currently, far too few people even know what deism is. The more we advertise and promote deism, the more we correct the problem. Bob Johnson, World Union of Deists, deism.com. So whether you agree with Thomas Paine and his revolutionary idea of a singular God that is there and a secular type God, right? His ideas about human progress and societal progress are really and truly indispensable. I hope you enjoyed that quick blurb about Thomas Paine. And for those of you who are curious about Thomas Paine and his Masonic connections, we'll say, there is a single paragraph. It's not very long, but essentially it's from allthingsliberty.com, which has a wonderful article that I will link to those who are interested. And it is about Thomas Paine. It says, "As he evidently was not a Master Mason when he wrote On the Origin of Freemasonry." So right there, let's take a break. Yes, Thomas Paine wrote something called On the Origin of Freemasonry. It's a longer type of pamphlet. It's really not very accurate in terms of its thought process on where Masonry came from. If you are curious, he does kind of allude to this idea that it came from Druidic origins, more of a primordial religion than anything else, which would explain its secularism, perhaps. However, moving back, he says, "As he evidently was not a Master Mason when he wrote On the Origin of Freemasonry, and as there is no suggestion he joined the fraternity in the interval between composing the essay and his death a few years later, in 1809, it may be concluded that Paine was not a Freemason. Still, though, the pantheon of Masons, of which he associated himself, does not include Thomas Paine. He remains connected to Freemasonry, if only due to his close friendships with members of the fraternity, to an affinity of his own outlook and deistic aspects of its philosophy, and to his having written an imaginative, if less than accurate, essay on its origin. And this comes out of Heredum number 22, published back in 2014, pages 95 through 106. Again, I will link that back within the show notes for you all to check out. So for our Craftsman Plus out there, I'd like to know, let's look at some of the intellectual giants of the past who moved the needle forward on the idea of human progress. It's kind of a hard thing to do because we want to look at these individuals, and yet we find fault in some of the things that they were doing. Thomas Paine is a difficult one in that some people say, well, he got married two or three times, whatever the case is. But based on what he was proposing, the idea of kind of equity and justice for all and the dissolution of monarchy and all of these things, did he practice what he preached is what I'm getting at. There are many philosophers and people of the past that we look to that we think, wow, they were so great, but did they practice what they preach? And we find out that they kind of didn't. They grandfathered themselves in somehow, and that was really interesting. But let's talk a little bit about that in the Craftsman Plus group. Next up, I want to read an interesting article, or essay rather, from Brother Jonathan Dinsmore. He's an entered apprentice as of November 25th, 2019. He may have progressed since that time. I'm not quite sure yet, but I thought that his essay, which was posted on universalfreemasonry.org, was really interesting and speaks to more, I guess, of a prehistoric or primordial essence of esoteric foundations within Freemasonry. And necessarily, Masonry is kind of connected to religion in a way that is not a religion, but is religious. So this article is called Inner and Outer, the Shamanic Thread Through All Religions. Does a shamanic thread weave through all religions? While we make no bones about the esoteric nature of our beliefs and interests in universal co-masonry, what may be missed by many is the connection which this esotericism in general has to a historical divide within perhaps all religions. While we may know the history of a religion, or at least the religious traditions we've been closest to in our lives, do we know their esoteric history? Do they all have an esoteric history? What is the purpose of the split between the esoteric inner and the exoteric outer teachings? The word occult means hidden and can be used interchangeably with esoteric, but what is it hiding from? Did this secretiveness arise simply to avoid the persecution of the Church in the Middle Ages and Renaissance, as we are often led to believe? Or has concealment always been in its nature? It would be absurd to attempt to tell any sort of true history of religion in the context of a single blog post, but I do want to highlight what is most relevant to the topic. In doing so, I think it's useful to return to the beginning. Where did religion begin? Archaeologically, we see the dim traces of the beginnings of religion as signified by cave paintings and burial sites, the point at which human beings honoring and burying our dead. In truth, we know very little about this twilight of belief. The first instance of religion, which we have more direct experience and knowledge of, is that which occurs in tribes, which has come to be referred to by anthropologists as shamanism. We see shamans in the indigenous tribes we encounter and study in modern times, and we assume that this system must have been present from our own beginnings and that these people serve as a glimpse into our past. For the moment, I'll work with this assumption without question. Shamanism involves a minority of the tribe, often only a single shaman and one or more apprentices serving in the interface between the spiritual realms and the tribe. What makes the shaman unique is that he or she is able to communicate with the world beyond the senses in a way that most aren't, whether through natural capacities or the use of psychoactive plants. In the case of shamanism, we can clearly see the beginnings of a mystical minority of the population, who are acknowledged and even vital to the tribe. As we move forward through the progressive trajectory of civilization, we see the same pattern but with changes over time. As people developed kingdoms and larger civilizations, they also began to build separate structures within each city, and temples emerged as spaces uniquely devoted to interfacing with the divine. It's interesting to note that just as the various buildings physically cordoned off each area of life with its government here, the market there, etc., so too did religions begin to be separated. It became less and less woven into the whole of life, as was more so the case in the tribe, and became something you do there, specifically. Furthermore, we might even say that this, in fact, was the beginning of religion, inasmuch as religion describes a specific, separate domain of human activity. If this be the case, then we can recognize that the emergence of religion was a product of the divvying up of life into categories, and simultaneously a continuation of the shamanic tradition. All of the above was also mostly relevant in cities where the people living in villages still relied on shamanic figures for much of the time, until the priesthood of the city began to replace the shamans and druids with priests. As far as we know, the esoteric side of religion also emerged during this time. Greece and Rome had their mystery schools, the Hindu kingdoms had their Brahmins and yogis, Israel had their prophets and later their Kabbalists, etc. However, this mysticism wasn't necessarily separated from the priesthood. In ancient Greece, for instance, it was expected or even required to undergo the initiations in order to be a priest, or, for that matter, any other prominent and influential member of society. Since these things weren't always recorded, we may never fully know just how connected the various esoteric traditions and their correlating priesthoods were. A question that I find very interesting is, why has this mystical minority seemingly always existed? Are they simply those which are smarter, less neurotypical, more prone to transition between different states of consciousness, or more likely to experiment with psychoactive drugs? Or could it be some combination of all of these things? It's commonly understood that many things, including human traits like height, IQ, blood pressure, and salaries, occur in the form of a normal distribution, or bell curve. This just means that when you plot them on a graph, the majority are normal, and so the middle of the graph is the largest, and the further from normal you get in either direction, the more it slopes off, like the edges of a bell, with fewer people being abnormal. Could it be that whatever trait or collection of traits contributes to someone being open to and capable of embracing the mystical side of life more completely is simply always a minority of the people out at the edges of the bell? And what about the rest of the people who live in the middle of that bell curve, who are normal? Why must they be separated? For most of us who find ourselves at the mystical end of the curve, life experience has taught us that those who dwell within the realm of normality are often not willing or able to understand many of the more profound concepts for whatever reasons. It often seems that what they need is exactly what exoteric religion provides: simplified stories and concepts which can give meaning and purposes to their lives, but which the more mystically inclined would find lacking. Perhaps that is exactly why exoteric religion was created. At some point, the inheritors of the shamanic thread understood what Jesus expressed when his disciples asked why he must speak in parables to the masses. Because having ears, they cannot hear, and having eyes, they cannot see. Of the many esoteric traditions, Freemasonry has served as an ideal refuge and vehicle for the mystically inclined. This is primarily because of its level of organization and practicality, which has facilitated its membership not just studying high concepts behind closed doors, but having a major influence on society at large, as well as a highly functional internal structure that allows us to be effective at getting things done. While the milk of parables is enough for most, for those who seek more solid food, we welcome sincere truth seekers of every kind. Jonathan Dinsmore, EA. What a profound look from Brother Jonathan in this, perhaps why religions were created, and this separation of ideas between deeper, philosophically minded folks and those who need a little bit less of that in their life. One thing remains certain, and that is there seems to be a place for everyone, and those deeper things come to those eventually. For our Craftsman Plus, I'd like to know where you are on the esoteric scale of things. 1, not at all. 10, all the way up there. We'll put a little survey inside the Craftsman Plus group, and feel free to vote and check out the responses. That's it for this week. I want to thank you all for joining us. One more time, our thanks goes out to our fellows, contributors, producers, and legacy partners. If you want to learn more about how you can support the WCY podcast, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out your options. Check out Skull and Crown for the latest in some of my custom leather works. You can also check me out at The Wizard of Arge on TikTok, where we do some tarot reviews and other cool things like that. And if you want to hang out in person, be sure to stop by in South Carolina or in Michigan. Those are the next two, I think, gigs I've got going on. And I'll see you at Masonic Week if you're going to be there. All around, hope to see you all. Lastly, a big shout out to Brother Matthew Parker of North Carolina. He was installed worshipful master of his lodge, and I am just so proud of his accomplishment and of his lodge. I know he's going to do great. Brother Matt, congratulations. And that's it. So until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
That's it. Okay, you're up.